Hey there! Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower-than-low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Hi everyone, I hope everyone's well out there. Oh, I've got a treat for you today. I'm going to talk to my dear, dear friend, Bill Wyman. Bill, as you know, was in the Stones for over 30 years and actually has just done a track with their new album, Hackney Diamonds, but also made his own band, The Rhythm Kings. And he's an amazing man. He's had such an amazing life and I hope you enjoy it. Well, hello, Bill. How are you?
I'm good.
Good, good, good. Well, I only saw you last week, didn't I?
Yeah, it's been a long time.
It's been a long, long time. Oh, we recorded that, didn't we?
Yes.
That's so funny.
That was one of the 12 tracks we did, yeah.
Yeah. We'll talk about that later.
Old classical music.
Yeah, lovely. Well, we're both fans of that, aren't we?
Well, I love all that 30s and 40s. You know, because I grew up as a child with that in my head.
That's right. That was well, you were born in the late 30s, right?
36.
Okay, so that was I was born in the late 40s. And my early memory of those songs were from my dad, actually, because my dad loved the big bands. So he used to, and he was a self-taught piano player. Okay. So they were all his kind of musical memories. So that's, as a kid, that's kind of what I grew up on as well.
Yeah, I get nostalgia when I hear old stuff like that.
I know.
It goes back to that early childhood when I wasn't quite aware of music or just heard it. I heard my aunts listening to it and all that, you know.
And would that be on kind of what they called the wireless, which we called the radio, right?
The wireless that my grandfather, yeah, actually built. So it was a bit of one of the earliest ones in the street where we lived at the time.
He built a wireless?
Yeah.
Wow, that's amazing.
And it had big accumulators, which were quite, I used to have to take them down to the shop to change them all the time.
I don't know what an accumulator is. What's an accumulator?
It's just what runs the electricity for them.
Oh, I see. Okay, okay.
Yeah, and it's a square glass thing, you know.
I know.
And I used to swap them for a new one, and I used to get a bit of the sort of acid on my fingers and it sort of tasted quite strange. It wasn't worrying.
Oh, my God. You could have poisoned yourself.
Well, I was only about 6 or 7 then, you know.
Well, I have to say, I'm just finishing. I've got about 5 pages to go. Your gorgeous book, Billy in the Wars. It's so lovely. And it really takes you back to the war years. And you were tiny, weren't you?
Well, I was 3 when it started, yeah.
Wow.
So I remember the Battle of Britain.
Do you?
Seeing the planes going over, yeah. All the German planes, 600.
That's right, yeah. Yeah, you said there was one moment when I think you were down in the air raid shelter and one of your neighbours took you out to show you one of the planes going over with the bombs.
That was a Doodlebug. It was a V1 rocket.
Oh my God.
They didn't have planes. They didn't have pilots. They were just
pilots. Didn't they? I didn't know that. Well, they sent up the rocket and then it would drop.
Yeah, they just had enough fuel for it to arrive over London, and then it ran out of fuel and just fell and exploded.
Oh,
and they used to take down about 8, 10, 12 houses.
Because it says in the book that because the English intelligence were telling the Germans they were overshooting London, they dropped back on fuel, so it was hitting southeast London.
Yes.
Which is where you lived.
Well, in our little 1 mile square area.
Yeah.
between Crystal Palace, Beckenham, on the other side, Sydenham and Annerley. 1 mile square, we had 17 doodlebugs land.
Oh my God.
We had one V2 rocket, the ones that went 100 miles up and came down and just exploded, oh and 37 bombs.
Oh my goodness. And you were one of what, four children?
One of five.
Five?
Yeah. I was the oldest. But they were all evacuated. I was just with my grandmother.
That's right. And actually, your memories of living with your gran sound really, really happy.
Yeah, they were fantastic. And of course, I was going to school as well in the bombing and the air raids as well. So.
My goodness. Are those memories really, really clear? Because you were so little.
Absolutely.
And you said in the book you were getting on a bus age six on your own.
Oh, yeah, I was going from Sydenham to Penge to see my gran.
That's amazing. On your own, on a bus. Can you imagine?
I was evacuated briefly and was unhappy, so I came back to live with my gran. My mum just put me on the train at Nottingham.
That's right. It's in the book. It's amazing.
Put me on the train and I went off to Euston. It was for 2 hours and plus, 2 hours plus by myself with my little jam sandwich.
Oh, Bill, that's so sweet.
To the carriage and my mum said, could you? In tears, my mum was, and she said, could you keep your eye on him for me?
Oh, my goodness. But that's so...
You know, and I remember it, you know, distinctly.
Amazing.
This lady gave me drinks from a little thermos she had.
Oh.
So a drop of tea and that in for my jam sandwich to go down.
Oh, I know. It's a wonderful book. When did this come? Did this come out last year?
In October, yeah.
I love the illustrations as well. They're lovely.
Yeah, they're by Owen Maron.
Yeah,
who's
beautiful.
My eldest daughter's boyfriend.
Oh, is that? Oh, yes, of course.
And he creates comics and things. He's very, very talented. So I used him for the illustration. And there is that picture of me sitting in the train, isn't there?
I know.
With my legs hanging.
And the one where you've got the real photograph of the back, at the back.
Oh,
he's
yeah.
done an illustration. Oh, you look so sweet in your little white shirt.
That's the earliest picture of me.
That's amazing. Absolutely amazing. Well, it's a wonderful book if anyone out there wants to get it. It's gorgeous. Billy in the Wars by Bill Wyman. I've got 5 pages to go. But the other thing I thought was lovely in it, that your mum taught you to knit and sew. Can you still knit?
a bit of a struggle now, yeah, because I can't remember, you know, the different knitting them. Things.
Actually, when I talked to your friend Ronnie Wood, he still knits. He can knit, which really made me laugh. He said he's a really good knitter. But I love to knit and sew. I think our generation learned, because my mum made most of our clothes.
Well, there's very little to do in those days, you know, so you did learn things like that.
Yeah, lovely.
And you had games to play and all that with cards and dice and, you know, the five ones, you throw one up and catch them. What's he called? Dabs. We used to call it dabs. I don't know, what, 5 stone or something. It's got different names. You had those things because there was nothing else, so you had to amuse yourself.
There was no television, no internet, no...
Well, we didn't have electricity until I was
17. And I love the story in the book of you saving up... You saw the bicycle in the shop window.
Oh, yeah.
And you saved up your meagre pocket money for months and months. And you take...
It wasn't pocket money.
Oh, it was? What was it?
I used to run errands for, you know, up and down the street, and the ladies used to give me a penny or a halfpenny.
Oh, okay.
And then I used to collect them, and the relatives gave me 3 penny pieces or 6 penny pieces. And I just used to take them down to the man at the shop, and he put me in a little black book. And then one day, after 4 months, I went down with some more coins, and he said, "You've paid for it."
Oh.
And he took it down. I didn't know what to do with it.
had you ever ridden a bike?
Well, I was only six. And I wheeled it home, and when I got home, my mother thought I'd stolen it, and she smacked me and made me go take me back to the shop. And then the guy explained it to her.
That's so funny. Mind you, I bet you cherish that bike because you...
Yeah, well, I had it all the way through the war, and I gave it to my sister, and her children used it after the war.
That's amazing. Have you got your cup of tea?
Of course I have.
I've got licorice today.
I mean, everybody's starting to drink coffee, haven't they? But I found out when I was living in France in the 70s that I was having tummy problems, and I realised at last it was coffee. And so I never drank.
Yeah. Oh, that's interesting. Well, how long did you live in France?
11 years.
Oh, did you? I didn't realise that. What, full-time living there?
Yeah, well, I was touring all the time, so with the band.
So you just go off with the Stones and do your gigs and then go back to France?
Yeah, I had the house in the south of France. So
yeah.
11 years, yeah, from 71 to 82.
Did you love living down there?
Well, you know, the climate was great, the food was great, the wine was great. All the ambience, there were a lot of English people, or English-speaking French people, which were fine. Artists and all that. I met all the artists, Chagall,
and
all those, you know, César, Armand, and I became friends with them. And so there was a lot of benefit there for living there, although I missed England all the time.
And I used Did you? That's interesting.
Well, I used to have to send away for Branston Pickle and you know, birds, custards, and all that, because you couldn't get it there. And I really miss that kind of stuff, you know.
That's so funny. Well, actually, when I first went to LA, I've lived there on and off in different periods of my life, and went in the early 70s, you couldn't get kind of Marmite and custard, and I really miss that.
There was also the problem of trying to make tea in France as well, because the milk was different, you know.
And the water's different.
Yeah, so you had your tea, English tea bags and that, or tea, but, you know, the milk, it just didn't work. So it was always...
Well, the worst place to get a cup of tea is in America, because they just give you a cup with hot water and a tea bag on the side. And they think you're mad. You say, no, you've got to boil the water and you've got to pour it on the tea bag while it's boiling. They think you're insane.
I know. You get that problem in hotels as well.
Yeah.
You know, the water is half warm, the water.
I'm ever doing a job there that is a long job, I just get somebody to get me a kettle and I plug it in and I do my own tea, because they can't make a cup of tea. Anyway, the other thing in your book, which I found really interesting, Billy in the Wars, was that your auntie, your mum's sister, once she had a date with an American soldier or sailor, and they went to a dance hall in Croydon, and she was looking after you, so she took you and you had a lemonade.
I think my gran insisted she took me.
Yeah. And you said it was the first time you'd heard live big band, and you thought, I want to, is that true? I want to do that.
Yeah. Well, she took me, my gran told her to take me, so make sure she came home, you know, because they were all servicemen, you know.
Oh, yes.
And they were all dancing, they were all doing the jitterbug to a big band. It was the Orchid Ballroom Pearly, I think it was.
Wow.
And I saw the big band there, and I thought, I'm just sitting there with the lemonade, you know, watching all this going on. And they were doing a jitterbug, which is like jiving, only through the legs and over the heads and, you know, all that madness, which is wonderful to watch. And I thought, God, I wish I could be in a band one day.
Oh.
But, of course, I never imagined that I possibly could, because you had to be a trained musician in those days to be in those bands.
That's right. Also, like me, I never dreamed what would happen to me would happen, because girls like me from my background didn't become models. And I bet grew up in quite a poor, loving family, but poor. So you didn't kind of think you could do things like that, did you?
No possible way.
It almost wasn't a dream. It was like, well, that can't happen to me, because I'm not from the right kind of class. Because I grew up in a happy home and, you know, I love a happy family and everything, but it was just like a thing that you didn't do.
Well, I pretty much lived with my gran right the way through. For brief times, I went back to my family just and stayed a while, sometimes a few years. But then I always ended up with my gran again, because she was so amazing. She taught me everything. When I was in grammar school, I was still living with my gran. And teaching me everything, you know, about collecting, about writing a diary, about keeping scrapbooks and da 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 da.
And you're a really brilliant archivist, aren't you? I mean, I know you archive everything. But do you think you got that from your gran?
Yeah. Well, she got me to collect cigarette cards in those days. It used to be in the back of cigarette packets, those cards. Stamps, postage stamps, and all those kind of things. And that's what started it, really. The shame was, when I did my military service in Germany in the RAF for 2 years, my mother threw all that stuff away. And when I got back on list, it was all my stuff. She said, oh, it was just kid stuff, wasn't it? I threw it away. All my diaries through the war and everything. Can you imagine what they would be like now? Diaries of a little boy growing up in the war. But luckily, my memory is there.
I say, you've got such a brilliant memory. It conjures up such a vivid picture of that time. And
well, we were bombed out twice.
I know you were.
And we were.
But was that hard? I mean, you must have missed your mum and your brothers and sisters, but then you loved being with your gran. It must have been quite hard as a little kid.
Well, you didn't have toys or anything, and you didn't have birthday presents and Christmas presents, things in those days. Aww. You didn't have the money for it, you know. Mm. And so you would share a Rupert annual, you know. And that's why I've always been fond of Rupert. I've got a Rupert badge on my coat that I always wear. And I've got the complete collection of Rupert annuals from 1936 now.
Have you?
And lots of other things like his scarf and badges, wow, and cups and mugs and all kinds of stuff.
So you went into national service. When was that?
55.
And you were posted to Germany, I read, yeah?
Yeah, Oldenburg in Germany.
North. And was it true that that's where you bought your first guitar?
Yes, that's where I first heard rock and roll music on American Forces Radio, because we're next to the American zone, very close, because we're near Hamburg. And I heard the beginnings of rock and roll, Elvis, Little Richard, and all them, Fats Domino, on American Service Radio, and that's where I was inspired. And then, of course, we heard about Lonnie Donegan.
Oh, yeah.
And that's where I started doing that.
So you did skiffle?
I formed a little skiffle band in the camp. And I had one of those T-chest basses I made, you know, with a broom handle.
Did you?
Yeah. Well, you did anything, because you didn't have money to buy things, really.
No,
but then I bought a horrible acoustic guitar in the town and that.
Uh-huh.
I tried to play that, which was impossible. And then when I came out in 58, I formed a band in South London.
Is that the Cliftons?
Yeah. And my drummer was playing with Mick, Keith and Brian in Chelsea sometime.
Oh, I was going to say, how did that link happen?
And then Dick Taylor left to go to college because he said there's no money in it. And my drummer said, you know, there's no bass player. So I came because I'd built myself a bass guitar.
Built it?
Yeah, it was I invented the fretless bass without knowing it. I didn't know it until about 20 years ago that it was the first fretless bass ever made. And So I joined then, and then later he left and Charlie joined. And then I was in a band at last.
Did you have any inkling in those early days? I mean, there's no way you could have, I suppose. You were probably just thrilled to be in a band, right? But you'd had no inkling that you were going to become one of the biggest bands.
We were playing blues, which was totally uncommercial.
Oh, really? Oh,
and so we were playing the jazz clubs, you know. So we were only being seen by jazz people originally.
And did you play on Eel Pie Island?
Yeah, we were the first. We were the first little band that played there.
In the late 60s, I bought mum and dad a house on the Thames in Twickenham.
Yeah.
And just down the river, they were on the river. You could see Eel Pie Island, and that was the big story in Twickenham, that the Rolling Stones started their career on Eel Pie Island. Is that true?
Well, we didn't start our career there, but we were there, you know. And we started in Richmond, actually. We were playing the clubs in London, and then we got fired by the jazz people. Because they didn't like us getting the applause that they weren't getting, you know, the traditional jazz bands. The three B's, you know, Acker Bilk, Chris Barber, and who's the other one? Kenny Ball.
They were all
the traditional. That's who were playing in all the clubs in London. Georgie Fane was at the Flamingo. and he became a friend in those days.
Yeah.
He was the only like jazz guy who liked us, actually.
Well, actually, when I was a mod in the early 60s, this is when I was still a schoolgirl, and we used to go, I was allowed out on a Saturday night to go to, a club with my friends, and we used to go to Harrow on the Hill, and they, above Burton's Tailoring, there was a little club for the mods. Okay. I mean, I had to be home at 10 o'clock, and the guy playing was Georgie Fame.
Yeah, he was great.
Isn't that, for that would have been 1963?
Yeah.
I mean, I was 13 and a half.
He ended up being in the Rhythm Kings for 20 years with me.
That's right. That's right.
It was wonderful.
The other people that played at this club were the Yardbirds, and that was Eric Clapton.
That was after us. Yeah, they followed us.
Okay.
Eric was, playing all over the place, actually, as Jimmy Page was. Jimmy Page was like a session musician, playing on all the singles for all these singers, and he was just a session musician before he was, But they all followed us because we were the first band that actually started to play blues and be successful, and then other bands started to do it. In the same way as Beatles started playing their kind of music in Liverpool, and then loads of bands got on, loads of people got on the bandwagon playing that style of music. They did the same thing with the Stones, you know.
So when was the moment when it went from playing little clubs to going, was it the release of a single, or was it, What turned you into like mega stars?
Yeah, 64 in 63. 63 was our first single in the June.
Uh-huh.
And in the autumn, we played a package tour around England, and we were fourth on the bill to Everly Brothers, Little Richard, and Bo Diddley.
Oh, wow. Amazing.
And that was an education. Being on a big stage all the time and watching, the way they performed and all that. And we learned a lot from those kind of people. And then the next thing we were doing, we were fronting a package tour with the Ronettes so on after that, That's when we started to become really big.
And was it like one single like Satisfaction that really rocketed?
That was much later.
Yeah. I'm trying to think of my... What was the first big single?
First big one was our third single, which was Not Fade Away.
Oh, Not Fade Away.
I'm going to tell you, I'm going to be...
Yeah, I'm going to give you a love to me. I love that. Yeah, because I was a mod in that time, so I do remember it. I just couldn't remember which was the first one.
Yeah, they got to number three in the charts.
Yeah.
And at the end of the year, it was voted best song of the year.
Did it? Well, I'm not surprised. It was a great song, actually. What about things like Paint It Black? Was that later? I love that.
Oh, yeah, that's much later.
Much later. I haven't got my chronological order is terrible. And when did you first go to America?
June the 2nd, 64.
Oh, that early?
Yeah.
Gosh.
Yeah, for 3 weeks and nobody had heard of us. And so it was pretty disastrous except for a couple of shows. We had a crazy night in San Bernardino where they all went crazy and all that. And then we had one in New York at Carnegie Hall we played.
Oh, wow.
And they almost destroyed the place, the kids. And they tried to stop us doing the second show. And we insisted on going and doing it. And that's when we were first really.
Wow. Obviously the way you looked had a huge part of it as well.
Yeah, the problem was we didn't have a hit record. You see, everybody that went out there, the Beatles went out 3 months earlier than us. They had like 3 or 4 gold records then, And then all the other bands, Jerry and the Pacemakers and The Search, everybody had number ones and gold records. When we went, our top record was 44 in the charts, which was Not Fade Away.
Oh,
and so we were unknown, really, and it was a bit of a disaster. But those two crazy shows started it. So when we went back the following November of 64, it was successful.
And was that through word of mouth or did it get in the press?
It got in the press, of course, yeah.
Yeah, in the press.
Yeah.
I first went into the States in 1967, and compared to the girls of my age. I mean, I was just 17 then.
You would have had mini skirts, but they wouldn't.
Yeah.
In America.
I looked like an alien being next to. They still had, they looked like, they were dressed like Jackie Kennedy with knee-length skirts and little hats and handbags and twin sets. Yeah. And I had mini skirts and my hair and my eyelashes. I must have looked like this weirdo.
And they used to have hair up, didn't they?
That's right. It was so funny because they were that far behind fashion-wise, and same with you guys in the bands.
Well, we were criticised because we didn't wear uniforms or anything. We didn't wear makeup.
Oh yeah, because all the American bands always dressed alike, didn't
they? Well, all the English did as well. We were the first band that went on stage casual clothes because we didn't have the money for uniforms originally. That was the original reason. And then when Andrew Oldham tried to get us in uniforms, we wouldn't wear them. And then the whole year went by and the bands were still all doing the dances and all the same coat, clothes, same guitars and all that. And then suddenly everybody started to change a bit, 64, 65.
So when, then you became mega. I mean, I can't even imagine how many hits you had. How many hit albums you were with them for what, 30 years?
I was with 31 years, yeah, from the beginning. To 90. Well, I left in 91, but they wouldn't believe me. They refused to accept I'd left. They just kept saying all the time, "You haven't left." And I said, "I have. I left in." And it wasn't till 93, 2 years later, when they were starting to get together to do the next tour, which happened in 94, of course. They said, "You actually have left, haven't you?" I said, "I left 2 years ago." You wouldn't accept it. And then they finally accepted. So they say that I left in 1993.
Was that because you were just sick of traveling or?
I just had enough. And I it was half my life. I thought, well, I've got other things to do. I want to do photography. I want to do archaeology. I want to write books. I want to have photo exhibitions if I can and do all kinds of different things, play charity cricket. I had so many things I wanted to do because I used to read about everything, ancient cultures and all that while I was on the road, and I'd take photos as well. And so I had this whole other life I wanted to live, and people used to criticize it, say, "How on earth you left the top band in the world, or one of the top bands in the world. Why'd you do that?" And I said, "Well, if you were a bricklayer and you'd been a bricklayer for 40 years of your life and you stopped, you wouldn't want to go back and be a bricklayer again, would you? You'd want to do something else."
But you didn't give up music because started the Rhythm Kings, right? You did for 2 years?
Two years, yeah. And I got married to Suzanne.
I know, and lovely Susan.
Three beautiful daughters. And so that was, and then I decided I wanted to play music, but a different kind of music, like jazzy, anything, blues, country, rock, reggae. And I got a band around with Georgie Fame to do that. So I would have a set band almost all the time, but sometimes Albert Lee was not available on guitar. So I'd have Martin Taylor, the jazz guitarist, Andy Fairweatherlow, and Peter Frampton on a tour and so on. And then you'd have the same drummer, the same horn players, the same girl singer, same me, same Terry Taylor. So it was pretty close. It was just swapping odd people that weren't available,
But when new people came in, did you have to do lots of rehearsal, or did they just, like musicians do, they just kind of go in and do it, don't they?
We used to rehearse Sweet Ace before a tour.
Is that all? That's amazing.
We'd have 8 new songs to learn, and then just revive the other ones. We just did it in 3 days. We're talking about consummate musicians here.
They're amazing, aren't they?
And so it was not difficult. When I used to be in the Stones, we used to rehearse for a month before a tour, playing all the same songs we've been playing for 30 years. It was crazy.
Why did they rehearse for a month?
Because that's the way they were. They were so casual about it, and sometimes someone that they wouldn't turn up, three of the band there to rehearse, and then the next day before, and then someone else wasn't there, and it was crazy. But that was the same thing in recording.
Once you'd made the decision to leave, though, was it nice, or did you miss it?
Oh, it was like a cloud off my head, you know. It really was a relief. Yeah, it was such a pleasure. The weird thing is, ever since, right until present days, I still dream. I'm on tour with them sometimes. And
Do you? That's interesting.
Or we're in the dressing room, or we're in that hotel. I still dream those dreams, yeah. And I dream of other friends like Bowie and all these other people I was friends with. I still have those really nice dreams, or very confusing ones, you know.
Because you were very, very close with Brian Jones, weren't you? Yeah. Wasn't he your best friend?
Yeah, he was, yeah. We shared rooms all the time.
Oh, so that must have been terrible.
Brian shared rooms, and Charlie and Andrew Oldham shared rooms. It was the three. Before we could afford suites or anything, you know, or our own rooms. And it was Brian and me that always used to go out in the clubs when we were on tour, you know, and we'd go and jam with, you know, the local bands and things like that. The others wouldn't be going, you know, be in the hotel. So it was good fun being with him, you know. Although he could be very horrible sometimes.
He could be very horrible.
Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah. Two things going with him, but everybody has a good side and a bad side, don't they?
Well, that's true. Yeah. That's true. But also, did you get tired? It must be really hard traveling all the time, flying everywhere, being on the road, living in hotels. I mean, that must be so hard.
You're changing currency. Of course, yeah. When you're in Europe, every country you went in, you had to change currency. You had to go through passport controls and all that. You've got different hotels with different food. Oh. And in America, you'd go from Canada up in the cold down to Miami in the heat. So you had to have all kinds of different clothes, different temperatures of, you know, in hotels. And then you had different food. And it was just, you're changing all the time, you know, a different bed. Once you're in a lovely bed in this hotel, you go to the next one, it's awful, you know. And you've got an awful room and it's drafty and cold and there's no heating. And so you had all those kind of things.
People think it's glamorous, but it's not actually.
No, the glamorous bit is being on stage for 2 hours. That's the glamorous bit. Forget it.
It must be amazing because you played stadiums, didn't you?
Oh.
Must be unbelievable.
Bands to really do big stadiums.
Yeah. What was it like walking out in front of those thousands and thousands? Did you get nervous?
No. It was the same as playing in a club, really. You just went out.
Really?
Well, you just played. Mick used to get a bit sometimes, a bit nervous, but none of the rest of us. So you all had each other to lean on. So you weren't like a solo artist. If you were like a Roy Orbison or something, you're on your own. You go out there and you've got to do it. Or even Elvis, you know, you're on your own. So, but you've got people backing you.
Did you ever meet Elvis?
No, I never met Elvis.
Were you a fan?
Oh, yeah, of his early years, yeah. Doing That's All Right, Mama, and all those things. Yeah, but I did meet most other ones, like Roy Orbison and all those, you know, because we toured with those people.
Yeah. Was he amazing, Roy Orbison?
He was.
That's an extraordinary voice, isn't it?
Yeah. We toured Australia and New Zealand with him. Well, we had so many people. We got Ike and Tina Turner in 67 to come to England, you know, to be famous, when they started to be famous. We played with Stevie Wonder. We always had top artists, you know. We always played with the top artists at the time. We were never scared of having a really, you know, other top bands with us, you know.
Yeah.
They might have had better records than us, better singers than us or something, but we were the best live band.
The other lovely book you did last year is your Bill Wyman's Chelsea. What gave you the idea to do that?
Well, I was just walking around Chelsea, you know, for exercise, like an hour every day. And I used to take my camera and just shoot the odd photo of the river or something. And I ended up with so many photos that I thought, you know, maybe I'll do a book on London, of the whole of London. And then I thought, oh, that's like Encyclopedia Britannica. I'd never get that. Get me out of finishing it, you know, there's so much. So I thought, oh, well, I could do one of Chelsea because I live here. And so in 4 years, I walked every street of Chelsea.
There's
hundreds of streets. And I took photos of anything unusual, interesting, different, in every street, from door knockers to toilet to towel hole covers on the pavement, to trees, to bushes, to front doors, to statues on walls, and there was so much stuff. And I ended up with almost 2,000 photos. And then I started to write the history of every street and all the houses and all the famous people that lived there.
It's a fabulous book, anyone out there listening. It's called Bill Wyman's Chelsea. It's really, really interesting. I mean, I live in kind of Kensington and I know Chelsea quite well, but I learned so much from your book. It's brilliant.
Well, it's extraordinary how many famous people actually lived in Chelsea over the years. Even people like Mozart was here briefly. And
really?
Yeah, it's craziness. You know, of course, Agatha Christie, you know, there was, you name anybody, you know, Oscar Wilde.
Well, it was always quite an arty kind of village, wasn't it?
Well, it started off with you know, Henry VIII set his manor down there. Just,
that's
he
right.
used to go to the other guy who he beheaded in the end, the old church, Sir Thomas More. You know, he has his manor there, and Henry used to come there first, and he liked it so much that he built a manor there. So, and then Elizabeth, the Queen, used to walk Chelsea, and you go up one street, and there's where they were sheltering under an elm tree in a storm, and it's called the Queen's Elm.
Wow.
There on the corner, and there's all that kind of
amazing
history that you.
Because you know, when Elizabeth the first time, it must have been in the middle of the countryside, Chelsea, wasn't it?
Yeah, it was all. It was like a little village by the river. All the artists were here.
Yeah, I knew it was a very artistic centre. But it's a brilliant book. Well done, you.
Royalty used to come here for the day, you know, and just spend time. It was fantastic, and it still is. You've got everything here. You know, I live between the river and the King's Road. I couldn't be better. I've got everything I want. Theatre, shops, restaurants. you know, all that. And I go down to the river. I've got the river. I've got wildlife there, you know, across the river is Battersea Park.
Yeah, no, you're right. You could walk across there. No, you're right. Well, we're up the road from you. But
do you know the Physic Gardens?
Pardon? Oh, yeah, they're fabulous, aren't
beautiful,
they?
Beautiful, you know. Hans Sloan built that as he was partly to do with the British Museum as well. Uh-huh. And so there's memorials to him. There's so many famous people that did so many great things who lived in Chelsea.
No, it's amazing. I also read you sold a Fender Mustang. I'm reading it because I couldn't remember what it was called. A 1969 Fender Mustang bass sold in auction for $380,000.
Yeah.
My goodness. I'm not surprised.
There was only about 20 of them built.
Yeah, but it was because you played it that it went for that.
Well, I had an amplifier that went for more than that. It went for about 500,000.
Oh, wow. Why would
my first amplifier, which I loaned to the Stones when I first joined them, because they didn't have good equipment.
Oh, wow. And that sold for more than the guitar?
Oh, yeah.
Why?
Because it was unique.
Oh, it was a one-off.
It was a Vox amp, which are mostly colored. This one was pale brown, and I bought it in like the early 60s with my band Clifton's.
Wow. What did it cost when you bought it?
Well, we did it on HP. I don't know. I don't know. I purchased because you never had enough money to buy things outright.
I know. It's amazing. Absolutely amazing.
My life's been incredible, you know.
I've
done archaeology and I found a Roman site that they never knew was there. I played charity.
Did you?
Yeah. I played charity cricket for 8 years and took a hat trick at the Oval against an old England.
What? Explain what? I don't know what. I don't know.
Yeah, three balls when you bowl.
Oh, okay, and that's a hat trick.
You bowl, he's out. In comes the next guy, bowl, he's out. Next guy comes in, you bowl, he's out.
Amazing. You also did an autobiography, didn't you, in 1990 called Stone Alone?
Yeah. Well, I've written 13 books now, and they've all been very successful. And I've written on a whole variety of subjects as well.
You're amazing. You never stop, do you?
No. I've got idea for about 4 books at the moment.
And you've had photographic exhibitions.
Yeah, around the world.
With your photography, yeah.
So I still have those.
But you won't fly anymore, will you? So you,
1990. I just didn't like it anymore.
Why?
We had some really bad flights where we just dropped for 7 seconds I thought, I don't need this. And I don't have to do it anymore, you know.
Your heart doesn't need it. I agree with you.
And my career didn't. I could do things from home, you know.
Yeah.
Which I've done since.
So if you go to France, do you drive or go on the train?
I used to drive, but now I go by train. It's very easy.
Yeah, because you get the big fast train down to the south, don't you?
Yeah, but you don't take the Eurostar to Paris, because if you go there, then you've got to go right across town to get to the other railway station.
Oh, so how do you get to
You head for Brussels and you drop off in the stop before that is Lille, still in France.
Oh, yeah.
And it's only an hour and three quarters or something. You go to Lille, you cross the pavement onto the TGV, which goes straight to Nice.
Oh, that's interesting.
So it's just one change, really. So that's very convenient.
Yeah, that is. Do you go to France very often?
I haven't been for a couple of years now because I had to go through prostate cancer treatment and all that, so I couldn't go anywhere. That's why I stopped with the Rhythm Kings.
Yeah, but you're well now, aren't you?
Oh, yeah, I got cured, yeah.
Yeah,
yeah.
Yeah.
I was lucky. They found it early, you know. So
that's a message out to everyone, really.
Yeah, you've got
every man out there, you've got to get tested.
Yeah.
You've got to.
All it is a blood test now. You can do it with a blood test, you know.
Yeah.
And you should do it every 6 months or something.
You should. Every male listening, please listen to Bill and me. Go and get tested.
Ladies have breast cancer problems.
Oh, yeah. But
and
then
guys
it's
have prostate cancer. They're the two big dangers you have, you know.
Yeah, no, I know. Well, it's like anything, any health issue. It's getting tested, or if you feel there's something different in your body or you feel funny, just go and get it checked out.
Yeah, because you have to, yeah.
The earlier you catch anything, whatever it is, the better. I just wanted, I mean, we haven't announced it yet, but we've been working together, haven't we?
Yep. Well, I've got a solo album coming out in March, April, which I finished quite a while back. And then I started to work with you, doing all these traditional songs from the 30s, 40s, 50s. And I asked you if you wanted to do it, if you remember.
I did. And then COVID came along.
Which stopped us.
Skyped for about 2 years.
We made selections of kind of songs or traditional songs we wanted to do.
And then you brilliantly, because we had so many songs from that period, and you kept sending me ones, lots of them I knew and lots I didn't. But I love that period, you know, and I've done things on stage and on film. My first film, The Boyfriend, was all 1920s music. So I love
that. I heard your voice and I thought, you know, you'd be perfect for this stuff.
Oh, well, thank you. But then you narrowed it down because I kept picking the ones you sent me. I kept picking and you said, a lot of these are by Mary Ford and Les Paul. So why don't we do a tribute to them?
Yeah.
And so they are all Mary Ford and Les Paul songs, aren't they?
Yeah, they're all the ones they covered, yeah, which are all classic songs anyway.
Yeah. They're
and I did it in a different way, didn't I? We didn't have a drummer.
I
just did a piano, bass and guitars. That's all it is. And you singing.
And lovely Bev doing the backing. She's brilliant.
Who was in the Rhythm Kings for 20 years. So I knew how she'd do it. And so we've just got to finish it off now, you know.
I know. It's exciting.
And it sounds lovely.
Scary, exciting. Thank you. Listen, thank you so much for talking to me on my podcast. It's lovely. It's funny when you talk to somebody you know so well and a friend. But it's lovely because lovely stories come out. I love, and again, do get these books, Billy in the Wars and Bill Wyman's Chelsea. They're absolutely fabulous.
Thank you.
Billy in the Wars really touched my heart. It's so touching to read. It's lovely. And it's so lovely because you obviously had some hard times, but there was a lot of love there as well, which is lovely. Anyway, I'll see you soon. And thank you.
Thank you. It's been fun.
Oh, he's so sweet, Bill, isn't he? And oh, God, he makes me laugh. Sorry, I hope I didn't make too much noise. I do get the giggles a bit. But his stories are extraordinary when you think of, you know, his upbringing. And do try and get the books. They're fabulous. Bill Wyman's Chelsea and Billy in the Wars. Quite touching. And hopefully the album I'm doing with him will come out soon. It's quite exciting. Anyway, take care and I'll see you soon. Bye. If this is your first time listening to Tea with Twiggy, please do remember to tell your friends. You can also subscribe for free on your podcast app and listen to all my previous guests. If you want to connect with me, I'd love to hear from you. You can find me on Twitter at Twiggy, or you can find me on Instagram at Twiggy Lawson. My thanks go to all the people that have helped this podcast happen. Many thanks to James Carroll and all the team at North Bank Talent Management. Thanks to all the team at Stripped Media, including Ben Williams, who edits the show, my producer Kobe Omanaka, and executive producers Tom Wally and Dave Corkery. The music you can hear now is my version of Waterloo Sunset by The Kinks. If you'd like to hear the whole song, you can find it and all the other songs I've recorded on iTunes and Spotify. So check it out. I look forward to you joining me for my next episode. So see you then. Bye.
You just heard a Stripped Media production.